Hello and welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy Football Podcast, Episode 3. My name is John Solly. I'm the Senior Digital Editor here at ProFootballWeekly.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolly. Thank you so much for downloading and subscribing to us in iTunes. We really appreciate that. We're coming to you from our sort of brand new studio. We've increased the audio quality here. We have definitely soundproofed it, so it looks awesome. No, it's a podcast, so you can't see it, but we're hopeful that the audio quality is even better than it has been. So thank you to our producer, Dan Mott, for getting that done. In our intro podcast, I mentioned that we were going to have some guests with DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports Experience. DFS has, of course, exploded in popularity, and getting people on the podcast who write about it for a living, who live and breathe it, I think can provide an interesting perspective on the largest growing segment of fantasy football. And that's who we have today. Mitch Block is a writer for Fantasy Labs, Number Fire, and Roto Academy. His work on Fantasy Labs is what drew me to invite him on. He's written some really interesting pieces on how to attack DFS fantasy football, and we'll get to that. But you can follow Mitch on Twitter at Mitch_Block to find his work. Mitch Block, welcome to the PFW Fantasy Football Podcast.
Hi, glad to be here.
Cool. I want to start with process. I think when it comes to DFS, one of the cool things is that there's more than one way to get to the top of a GPP or get consistent success in cash games. It's something that we'll ask each of our DFS guests here on the podcast. So I want to focus on your process, Mitch. Without giving away all of your secrets, without giving away the story here, what's your typical NFL week like? When does it start all the way up to lineup lock? What are you paying attention to? What are you researching? How much time are you spending just setting up your lineups, really?
Sure. So I'll just go through kind of a day-by-day, I guess. So it's going to start Monday morning for me, generally. I'm going to review all the pricing data for the upcoming week. In the past, I used to have a few automated processes that pulled all these things in. These days, I just rely on Fantasy Labs models, as it's all right there for me. Monday and Tuesday, then, I'm going to be doing a lot of my core research for the upcoming week. It's going to include reviewing the matchups for the week, both for the teams and the individuals. I'm not a huge DVP guy. It definitely factor that in, but more so I'm looking at how a team's giving up production. So if a team's giving up a ton of production to tight ends, say, for example, how are they doing that? Is it just in the red zone? Are guys just sitting down in the zone across the middle? If so, that might be something we can attack instead with, say, a slot receiver, something like that. But trying to look away from the general fantasy points against type of thing that you're going to see everywhere. In addition to this, at the same time, I'm starting my writing usually at this point. So I'm doing research for those articles. I do a lot of stuff focusing on value. So I kind of get a good idea of what the lower end guys are going to be for the week. Finally, then, I tend to have a series of trends set up in our trends tool on Fantasy Labs. It's essentially just a queryable database that's going to show you how a player has performed against how you would expect. I'll set these for, say, we have a bunch of cold weather games coming up. I want to know how quarterbacks in general have performed when the temperature is less than 50 degrees, 40 degrees, just to get an idea. Then on Wednesday, I'm going to actually start getting to play around. At this point, I'm hoping to have kind of read or listened to as little as possible, just to kind of have my own perspective on it. I think that's one of the ways you can really differentiate yourself. There's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of good information, but it's easy to kind of let that into your biases. Say you read on 5 or 6 different sites, the Tyrod Taylor is an amazing play this week. He may very well be, but your research might have led you away from him one way or another. And the rest of the day on Wednesday and through Saturday, I'll actually dig into some of those podcasts and articles just to kind of get a perspective of what others are doing, what they're thinking. I want to see if there's any blind spots in my research. Maybe I missed someone at this point, and it's a good way to see. And if I did, if everyone's on someone and I'm not for a reason, I'm going to look into it. Either that's going to be a great spot to fade that guy because his ownership's probably going to be big, or maybe I need to go back to my research and see what I missed. Then on Sunday itself, I'm usually just checking Twitter, watching the pregame shows, what most people are probably doing at that time of day. I'm trying not to overreact. I try not to tinker too much on Sundays, as it usually ends poorly for me. I notice when I do. And then if I'm playing any of the late swap sites, throughout the day, generally as we get into, to say, late third quarter, early fourth of the first set of games, I'll check out my lineups, check Twitter again, see if there's been any major changes, anything I need to adjust to. And yeah, I'll do that for the night game and Monday night as well.
That's cool. So I'm glad you brought up Fantasy Labs and the trends and all the tools that are available there. Before you sort of had access to that, how much time were you setting up, you know, were you just in an Excel spreadsheet that you were setting up your database or your systems?
Yeah, I used to use a lot of Excel. I would write stuff in either VBA or I did have some Python set up to pull things in. But for the most part, yeah, I was out of a spreadsheet. Just I try to automate as much as possible. But these days, I'll still utilize some of that a little bit just to kind of have a little bit different perspective than everyone else is going to. But Fantasy Lab stuff just saves me a ton of time, so I tend to use it a lot more.
One more question here with Mitch Block on your process. You mentioned sort of avoiding everything else, avoiding reading articles, you know, up through about Wednesday or so. How much of that plays into, or where did you learn that from, I guess? Because it can really play into your bias. Like you said, if you see Tyrod Taylor's a great play on six or seven different sites, I'm going to want to play Tyrod Taylor if I see it everywhere else.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few people talk about it. I know Jonathan Bales, one of the co-founders of Fantasy Labs, has spoken about it in the past, that he... the first thing he does is try to make his lineups on his own. I guess, and a lot of it just came from me realizing that when I was going back over my lineups and seeing, okay, I didn't like this person. Why is he in 80% of my lineups this week? And the reason was because I read about him so much that it pushed into my mind, well, he can't miss. Everyone else is on him. He has to be the correct play. And it's not to say there's not value, and there's a ton of value, especially for cash game research. I definitely rely on that because... usually these are going to be the optimal plays. These are guys in the best situations, guys with the most talent or the best opportunity that week. So they can be an amazing cash game play, but they're probably going to be very popular tournament plays. So I tend to sway away from them if possible. It doesn't mean I always will, but if I'm going to be playing those guys, I'm going to be trying to differentiate elsewhere.
I want to talk about three things you wrote over at Fantasy Labs: the year in review on DraftKings for quarterbacks and running backs, and is fear affecting your GPP performance, which I thought was a fantastic headline that definitely made me click on it. But first, I want to talk about performance review in general. Do enough DFS players do that, do you think? You go over lineups and they put out and work to improve their game sort of by working backwards that way?
I'm not certain, I guess. I mean, they should be if they aren't. And I know... so Brian Mears over at Fantasy Labs has written in the past too, one of the best times to do that is actually when you're having success. Because sometimes we'll blindly just assume because we've had success that we're doing well. And in football, with it being such a high variance sport, it's easy to fall into that. You can fall into a bunch of touchdowns a couple weeks in a row and assume you were making all the right predictions, the right choices. So if people aren't, I think that's something you should be doing. Maybe if not weekly, bi-weekly, football is such a short window we have that you have to kind of react. You have to make sure not to overreact, so it's tough. But
yeah, I know. I generally will review my lineup when I've lost because I want to know why I lost. But if I've won, I'm like, well, that's great because I'm awesome. So I definitely think that's good advice for people who are maybe just getting into DFS and haven't done much playing with it. With quarterbacks, specifically, again, on DraftKings, quarterbacks were really priced down as a whole. This past year, so searching for value became, I think, as you wrote, idiot-proof, seemingly idiot-proof. But it was guys that were sort of initially, especially the first couple months, in that sort of awkward mid-tier. I'm thinking of like Cam and Carson Palmer, two guys you pointed out in your article that sort of outperformed their salary. Assuming that pricing stays the same, we're gonna work off that assumption. Is that sort of how you're evaluating QBs going forward in DFS fantasy football?
When we're looking at especially tournaments and to a degree in cash games, but yes, I think so. There were just so many options down at the bottom that it was tough to miss horribly. It's not saying you wouldn't, but with Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, you had guys who were way too consistent to be priced where they were. But we were getting almost elite level production out of Palmer for most of the season and Cam really for the entire season at a great bargain and usually at a discount just because people generally, not everyone, but most people look high or they look low when they're getting their quarterbacks. They might end up in the middle just because of roster construction. But if they're not paying up, they're paying way down a lot of times. So it can lead to, if nothing else, a unique lineup construction that others aren't going to have.
Generally, when you're doing lineup construction, are you looking quarterback first or are you looking value first? Where do you generally start when it comes to lineup construction?
I tend to start value and work my way back from there. It differs a lot in the NFL, especially once you get going. Early season especially, I'm looking for value. As we get going, the value becomes fairly apparent when a running back goes down. If there's a big change, if there's a change at quarterback, a promotion at a different position. But early on, I'm especially looking for value, and then I'll work backwards. If I have the room and it makes sense, I'll put a higher-priced quarterback in there. It's not that I'm against it, but if I end up with one of the lower guys, especially the way it was this year, I'm certainly not upset.
I want to move on to running backs. We know that because pricing comes out so early, there's often a lot of value created because of that. Running backs get hurt, and the information of that comes out a little bit late. Their backups are underpriced, and their immediate chalk plays, not only in cash, but I think in tournaments too. How much game theory are you applying to running back selection in tournaments? We'll start with there.
Sure. I think it was huge this year, and it didn't necessarily always work out, but I faded Devontae Freeman from the moment that he played well, and it cost me, but at the same time, I don't think it was necessarily the incorrect play. I mean, he was getting to a point of over 50% ownership that if he gets injured, which he did later on, when I think he left the game against the Chiefs with a concussion, but that was after the point that he was not so hyped at that time. But if he goes down, you essentially have half the field beaten or very close to it. I'm pretty big on fading those guys if possible. Cash games is a different story, but in tournaments, it's tough really to gain an advantage when half of the field already, you guys have a blank spot basically. You're playing one man down, which only increases the chance that you're going to have to beat all of those people and anyone else. Everyone else is still out there. It doesn't say that someone else couldn't have a good game at that point.
Definitely. We are talking with Mitch Block, and coming up on the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy Football Podcast, we're going to talk more about game theory with Mitch Block from Fantasy Labs. Welcome back to the PFW Fantasy Football Podcast. We are talking DFS with Fantasy Labs' Mitch Block. You can follow him on Twitter at Mitch_Block. And Mitch, I want to talk about game theory in general, but really something that you wrote, is fear affecting your GPP performance? It's one of my favorite things that I've read it a few times now. I definitely will have it bookmarked for the upcoming NFL season. We have a stronger preference to avoid losing rather than going for winning, which I find kind of incredible. Because what do we rail on NFL coaches for? Punting, playing not to lose instead of going for a win. Because in Madden, we're not punting, you know. When it's our butts on the line, we're risk averse. The example that you used that we've talked about earlier is Devonta Freeman. I know I've done it plenty of times. How difficult is this for you on a weekly basis to avoid fear in your GPPs?
When I first started especially, I know it was incredibly difficult. The idea that you're not going to play the optimal guy when he's available to you is something that's difficult to newcomers. But to actually get to the point in the week, okay, it's time to set that roster to pay the money essentially to play these players and to know that this guy has a very good chance of going off for 2-3 touchdowns and he's not going to be in my lineup is tough. But I think you'll find that if you're looking to actually win these GPPs, not place, not cash in them, the odds of doing so are just so much greater when you're not playing those extremely high-owned plays. It's not to say you can't, but it seems to be a tough hurdle for a lot of people to get over.
Yeah, I know. I have a real hard time because when I construct my own rosters and I'm in there on Thursday and Friday, and man, this guy, there's just, he's in a great situation. I know everybody's on him, but I'll just stick with him and find another place to pivot. I have a real hard time getting off that guy. So I think your article is a real help to sort of illustrate that you want to get ahead of as much of the field as possible, right?
Correct. I mean, I guess what if we're playing a player like that, we're essentially betting that we are that much better at selecting every other player than the entire field. And we're playing large field GPPs that could be hundreds of thousands of entries, which it's possible. Yes, there are most of the teams that won last year, these big GPPs had Freeman on them because he was performing so well. But if we fade him and he gets hurt, game flow goes against him, which with him, at least he is going to catch some passes. But say game flow turns on him, then we've eliminated half the field. Then we only have to be better than half of them. And I think it's tough for us to admit sometimes that we're not that good, that the odds of us beating every single one of those entries, especially when we have to take out basically a free space, it's fairly unlikely.
No, come on. We're all awesome players, right? That's why I signed up for this, because I can win easy money that way, right?
Yep.
And it is so much harder than that. And I think people really started to maybe realize that last year, and that you really need to bring in a lot of this game theory and avoid your fear and avoid your biases. And that's so tough to do, in especially in these large field GPPs, I think.
Definitely, yeah. And I think we get into a mindset that there are can't-fail situations, which is kind of funny because football is so high variance. I mean, a player could be in an absolutely great spot. You could have a quarterback against the Saints. Last year seemed like you can't lose, but if your defense runs back, it picks off a breeze and they score a touchdown, and then your running back scores, you're already up 14-0. You're probably going to be taking the air out of the ball a bit. I mean, Jameis Winston was a very popular play last week, late in the season, or last year. And he did not play so great.
Yeah, and I found those situations with the wide receivers, the high-priced wide receivers. And wide receivers, it is such a high-variance position compared to quarterback and running back. I was like, well, there's Julio, there's DeAndre, there's Odell. I've got room for two of them, I think. There's no way I can fail. And, you know, it goes against you sometimes.
Definitely. And I think we saw a lot of people, not me, make a lot of money off of playing people like Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. In place of those kind of guys, they were seeing the same kind of volume, but the price just wasn't nearly as rough on your lineup to include them in there.
It was kind of that awkward price range where it was like 7,100, 6,400, where it affects your roster construction a little bit.
Definitely. And I mean, we guys like Julio, they're amazingly talented, and it's difficult to think of them failing, but if teams commit to it, you can take a wide receiver out of the game.
And I think if there's anything I've learned on this podcast and from reading your stuff, Mitch, it's embrace awkward, which is kind of my life philosophy. I'm an awkward guy anyway. So
yep.
Embracing awkward in DFS is definitely the way to go, I think, in when it comes to GPPs.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, cash games are different. I mean, the guys are chalky and popular for a reason. They're in the optimal spots. They are in the best likelihood that they're going to succeed. It's just when we think about it for tournaments, I mean, what is that likelihood? Is it 60? Is it 70%? How guaranteed are they to actually perform well?
Yep. All right, Mitch, I want to get to my last question with you. I don't know if you saw the recent RotoWorld breakdown of stacking. They took a look at the top 10 lineups in the DK Millionaire Maker, and I think it was the FanDuel, either Sunday Million or the Bomb. And just sort of broke down the stacking on that. And it was pretty clear that quarterback, wide receiver stacking was a good idea to get into the top 10 in those big GPPs. I don't know where you stand on stacking, and I'd love to just hear your opinion on that.
Sure. I know RotoViz has an actual correlation chart for stacking, and it is strong between wide receivers. I think wide receiver 2 actually is higher than a wide receiver 1 with a quarterback, but it's a strategy that I generally will employ, but I don't force it. I think we saw that last year with a player like Tyrod Taylor early in the year. He was playing so well, and people kind of thought, well, we have to pair him with someone. Well, they spread the ball around. He was picking up yards on the ground. That just wasn't someone that made great sense to team with him. But then a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, I was perfectly fine with stacking him with Marshall and or Decker or I mean, lots of times both of them, because the scope of that offense was just so narrow. Those guys were eating up all the targets. In general, as game theory, I think I tend to lean wide receiver 1 with my quarterback, regardless of what the numbers say. If someone's going to go off on a team for a big enough performance to matter, it tends to be them. If I'm paying down at quarterback, though, I am not as apt to necessarily stack. I'm fine if I'm paying down at kind of betting that there's going to be enough production elsewhere to make it worth it. But it's not to say I won't.
Just really depends on the week, then, doesn't it?
Really,
the matchups.
It really does. I'm not as huge on it as some people are. You have a lot of players, say like Tom Brady out there, who there's not always the best stacking target. There has to be someone who makes sense. And then on the other hand, we have a team like the Falcons, where Julio can go off and Matt Ryan can have 200 yards and two touchdowns.
And most of them are to Julio.
Yeah, it isn't really an optimal spot. You could have gotten a lot better production out of another quarterback. So it really depends week to week, I guess, for me. But I'm not averse to it, certainly.
All right, our last thing here with Mitch Block. I'm in a bit of a competition with our Chicago football podcast host, Kevin Fishbane. I'm a producer on that show. He's got his dream list of guests, and we've been sort of ticking it off. I've got my dream list of guests. Now, Mitch, you were an amazing guest. We want to thank you so much for having us on. We have some equally amazing guests on my dream list, and two of them are the co-founders of Fantasy Labs, a place where you happen to be. So if you could put in a good word with Mr. Bales or Peter Jennings, that would be outstanding. Just if it happens to come up, not forcing it, but you just sort of drop like, hey, I was on the PFW Fantasy podcast. That might be a worthy opportunity here.
Definitely. I'll throw something their way.
All right. His name is Mitch Block. You can follow him on Twitter at Mitch_Block. Outstanding fantasy writer. Mitch, thank you so much for hopping on.
Thanks for having me on today, guys.
And that will do it for the Pro Football Weekly PFW Fantasy Football Podcast. I want to thank our producer, Dan Mott, and Mitch Block for being our guest. And we will see you next time.